post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst, the near post, get there first.
Welcome to the near post. You're with Eamon Fitzham and Michelle Fitzham. How are you?
I'm fantastic, Eamon. How are you going?
Great to have you here, Michelle. You all right?
Good evening, Eamon. I'm well, thank you.
Good, and a big hello to Clayton in Japan, Stacey in Seattle, Washington, Andy in Glasgow, Scotland, and anybody else who's listening out there on the podcast, we say good day to all of you guys. Now, we've got a big show coming up. Thanks to Capital Football, first of all, for sponsoring and supporting us on the show. Michelle, what's coming up?
Well, in the first half hour of the show, we've got an interview with AIS Skills Acquisition coach Richard Shuttleworth. We've got Fitzham's Big Issue. We've got an interview with Matilda's doco maker Helen Barrow. We're going to be speaking about the Socceroos and some news, either rumours or news.
Well, we like what isn't news or rumours. Well, we'll just
hear it first on the Near Post.
That's right. Okay, if you want to contact us, you can contact us on the email nearpost2xx@gmail.com and catch the podcast on the blog www.nearpost.blogspot.com, which I must say, in times of Socceroos, the blog is increasing massively in hits, so I must be doing something right. But anyway,
definitely
lots of football fans out there. Okay, we want to dedicate the show as always. And last week and for a few weeks now, we've been bagging Prince Harry, as he's known, and we dedicate the show to Harrycule. We've never left you, Harry. We've always been your biggest fan. Not like those bandwagoners out there. You know, some people have sort of said, you know, Harry can't do it anymore. Not us. We've always said Harry's the one. So thank you, Harry. Thank you for the goal. And long may we have some more. Now, we've got a quiz question for our football experts on the other side of the desk, Michelle Fitzham. And I must tell the listeners that there's been a few games going on. Michelle has been trying to... I've been getting emails from Fitzham on the quiet saying, what's the question for tonight? You know, please tell me about the question. And then Michelle has been asking for information on the quiz question, but don't tell Fitzham. So, you know, there's a little bit of competition going on there, guys.
There is. What can you do?
Unfortunately, I'm not winning.
Everybody wants to be a winner. Now, here is the quiz question. Name two parts to it. First of all, the number of A-League players in the Socceroos squad to go to Dubai. And secondly, who are they?
I'm guessing about six.
Six for you, Fitzham, Michelle?
I got seven.
Seven. Well, Michelle, that's a top marks for you because I think the actual answer is eight. Okay. Mm. Now, who are the players? Give us a go.
Carney.
David Carney, he plays in England. He's no longer an A-League player.
Oh, well, wasn't he last?
Yeah, he was last year, but he's moved. That's okay.
Can I change to Nikolai Topor-Stanley then?
You can. You can start with Nikolai. Okay. Nikolai.
Archie Thompson.
Archie Thompson, that's two.
Jade North.
That's three. Michelle, are there any more?
I don't know. I was going to say Bruce Jeter, but he's going to
But still
Turkey.
An A-League player, so...
Bruce Jeter. Yeah, we'll count him.
Because the season hasn't started.
No, we'll count him.
Mile. Jedinak.
Jedinak, that's right.
Is there.
Yeah.
Oh, not sure if he's there, actually. He's not. Adam is not there, is he? Adam Griffiths?
No, he's not. Joel. Okay, I'll go down the list for you. So you didn't do too bad, apart from... David Carney, Ante Kovac with the Newcastle Jets. Bruce Jeter, Adelaide, we'll still count him. James Holland with Newcastle Jets.
Oh, yeah.
Mile Jednak.
He's only from Newcastle, so.
Mile Jednak, Central Coast. Jade North from Newcastle, of course. Archie Thompson, you got. Nikolai Topor-Stanley, you got. And Roddy Vargas is the other one.
Oh, that's right,
at,
yeah.
Melbourne Victory. And Ruben Zakovic has gone to Derby, so I guess he doesn't count. The Socceroos in Asia, well, it's a fantastic ride through Asia for the Socceroos. We had our 1-0 huge victory in the World Cup against Iraq. Michelle, first to you, what are your thoughts?
Well, I take back what I said about Harrycule last week.
Oh, you were one of them, were you?
Yes, I was. I wasn't very nice to him because I said Caitlin Muniz could have done a better job.
Well, so what were your thoughts on Harry?
I thought he stepped up this week or in the last game, yeah.
He did, as we say in football, he stepped up to the plate.
And scored the goal, the winning goal.
So, Harry, good on you, got on your plate and did it. Scored the winning goal, great goal, did they? You could head the ball.
Great header.
I didn't know. That was especially the one that Iraqi keeper saved halfway through the first half was even a better header.
Yeah.
Didn't think he could jump as high as he did and connected to the ball pretty well as well.
What about the game overall, Michele? Okay, Harry was a hero for you, but what about the rest of it?
I think Australia did play better than they played against Ghana, but still I think, the Iraqi gave them the Iraqi could have been probably the better team on the night.
I'm not sure about better team, but definitely the Iraqis had more opportunities, and the defenders couldn't cope with the one lone striker that Iraq had, and obviously it shows the quality of Iraq as a team as well.
And I think probably Mark Schwarzer should be man of the match.
Oh, fantastic. I mean, he saved the penalty against China, which, I mean, really thought had gone in, that would be 3 points dropped. And he saved as many times the other night. So, you know, really, I mean, that's 6 points he's earned.
Oh, definitely.
No, 4 points he's earned the team. So, so we're looking good with China and Qatar drawing overnight, 0-0. Australia sitting on 7, Qatar on 5, I think.
Yeah.
And China on 3 with 3 draws. And Iraq, the Asian champions.
1 point, I think.
1 point, Iraq.
Yeah.
Do you hear me, Iraq? 1 point. 1 point. So I think we did get revenge for... You know, you can't... I'm delighted to get the win, but the way we were ripped apart time and time again, it was beautiful to watch, actually. I mean, don't you love World Cup football? There's 48,000 people there. It's suddenly a tense affair. It's, you know, it's crucial. Every kick is crucial. It's happening in Australia. You're seeing some wonderful players from, last night or Sunday night, it was Iraq. Mm. And, you know, when they go through, if they hit the bar, they hit, you know, shorts or save, it's do or die stuff. It's fantastic.
That's when you say, you know, a win is a win. That's the only time you can say a win is a win.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you get your Craig Fosters and these guys who, you know, go on about the beautiful game. And but, you know, I've even heard Michele Bertrand sitting across the desk there say about a beautiful game, but I don't care. At the end of that game...
I agree.
I beg your pardon?
All my praying paid off.
That's right. Because, you know, at the end of the day, you just got to get that win, haven't you?
And that's where you got to start. You got to start somewhere. Australia is at this level, is still new. And I think they've just got to, for the younger boys and younger players looking out, that this is what they'll be remembering. This is what they try and aspire to get to. So definitely a win can only do good.
Mike Cochran, the SMH, talked about how Brett Emerton and David Carney, the two fullbacks, were excellent. I disagree.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. I thought, I disagree. That's what I meant as well.
They were good going forward. Particularly Emerton, but I mean the opportunities came down Carney's side and Emerton in the last minute. Hawar Mullah Muhammad broke
balls
through,
coming across from wing. And I thought partly including that and Australia, I think need to work on a bit with. They need one or two midfielders that are creative in a way that the Iraqis had, I think, and other countries, and that's what missing, I think, is a link between the defenders in the middle.
In fairness to Australia, we had Lucas Neal out, although he'll be arriving in Doha on Sunday, so he'll be able not to play against Iraq, but he can play against Qatar. And he's having twins, by the way, so we wish you well, Lucas, and your partner.
Yeah, congratulations, yeah.
Twins is going to be keep you busy.
And Kennedy, I think, also is coming.
Josh Kennedy, he could be back because his partner's had a baby. She's an Australian basketball player, I think. And she's he'll be back for the game, or he'll play perhaps the last come off the bench for the game against Iraq. Milos Sijoski, his wife, hasn't given birth yet, so he won't be coming. Timmy Cahill still injured, and Mark Viduka, of course, we know what about him. That's four or five players who would probably be in the starting line. So that's
true.
A big loss.
I think it's a big credit to the players that are actually stepping up and making call-ups count.
Who did we like on the field? Who did we like? We liked Harry, obviously, Mark Schwarzer. Mm.
Bresciano didn't play too bad either. I think he may have had a chance there to have a shot earlier than he did. But I think he did play.
He had a couple of chances, didn't he? Like another one sort of just rolled off his foot when he should have just stopped it and just
scored.
Brett
Holman came in and did a lot of running.
I like Brett Holman. I mean, people sort of bag him out, but I think he works hard. He's fast.
Definitely.
Adds a bit of pace. Jade North
did well, did well when he came on.
Bruce Jute, I mean, 2 years in Turkey, and he could be looking a great prospect for the World Cup.
Definitely. You know? So
there were some hopes. It was much more positive than the Ghana game, and we should be better for the. I mean, I know we're going to be playing in heat in Iraq, but or in
Dubai,
yeah. But it should be, they'll be better for the experience, and I mean, they must be confident of, you know, improving as a team.
Definitely, especially with one or two players being added to it, and especially if someone like Josh Kennedy comes on and helps out Harry Kewell up front, that's going to make a difference as well.
Not to mention the lone Celtic striker, Scott McDonald. Needs other players. I mean, obviously a quality player. You don't score 31 goals in Scotland, despite what people say about Scottish football. And you don't score against AC Milan and Spartak Moscow unless you've got something. So Scott McDonald, he's clearly not a Mark Viduka, and he's clearly not, I suppose, even a Yunus Mahmoud. But he does have talents. He can score a goal. But, I mean, if you're not going to get the ball to him, then you probably... he's probably not necessary.
Yeah, I think he's a player that will do well facing the defenders, running up at defenders possibly. He's not. I don't think he's as good as someone like Viduka with his back to defenders. So
clearly not. But you know, if we get the ball, I guess when we play, international football, Australia can't always pressure teams the way Celtic can. Obviously, Celtic's strongest team in Scotland, so they can, you know, spend most of their half and put some extra forwards on. Yeah. So it's a very different game for him. So you know, but you know, we're going to need him, and hopefully, he's got the patience to do the right
definitely.
Thing.
Yeah, definitely. I think he just needs to hang around. The more he plays with the boys, the better he'll get.
He's got a. It's a team game, isn't it?
Oh, definitely.
He's a fiery character as well. You know, he wants to play, but yeah, it's a team game. So Scott, you just got to keep.
He still worked hard. He still made the runs. So.
And he did his bit. Yeah. So okay, all right. Well, we've got a couple of interviews coming up. Firstly, we've got. There's a Matildas documentary coming up this week, and we'll have a listen to an interview in just a moment.
The Matildas have shown we can be world class. The Near Post, get there fast.
You're listening to The Near Post across Australia on the Australian Community Radio Network. You're with Michelle Amon and Fitzham. The Matildas Never Say Die Matildas documentary is going to be shown on SBS on Saturday night. Helen Barrow produced it, made the documentary, spent about 6 months with the Matildas, and I caught up with her this week. The Matildas are at the Asia Cup, so it's probably good timing to show the documentary. And we'll be discussing the Matildas' progress later on in the show.
I'm joined by documentary maker Helen Barrow. Helen has just completed Never Say Die Matildas, which will be shown on SBS on Saturday night at 9:30. Helen, you're not a football fan, but you've made an interesting documentary about women's football. What led you to that?
Well, I was initially inspired by my own daughter, who's 10 years old, who plays football. And in our early research, I looked around and saw that there are very few documentaries or articles about women who play sport, in particular women who play football. And I thought it was time that we started putting media out there and discovering role models for our future players in Australia. When we first started filming, the girls were right in the middle of their trials for the Olympics. And I must say, for a moment there, I thought, well, we could follow them through to the Olympics, we could follow them through the World Cup, and we're, you know, possibly it could have been 12 months of filming, and we would have made a mighty documentary out of that. Unfortunately for the team, they didn't qualify for the Olympics, and that was a very tough realisation for them. They had at that point already qualified for the FIFA World Cup. So when I started filming, I actually found the team really at a low ebb emotionally. It was a number of months of filming and, you know, sort of daily training for them to get back up on that high again, both physically and emotionally. And then, of course, you know, every time you play football and you walk out in that field, you never know whether you're going to win or whether you're going to lose, because almost every single team that you play is as good as you are. So the competition's pretty, you know, stiff. And so when each match is on, you're thinking, well, this could be it. We could get through, or maybe we won't. And so you're constantly looking for all sorts of ways to tell that story. But I wanted to sort of take individual characters who kind of represented the whole, what it means for them as women to play football. We focused on Melissa, the goalie, who is based in Melbourne. You have to remember, of course, that these girls come from all over Australia. Now, you know, she plays for a men's team in Melbourne when she's not playing with Matildas. She gets her sort of edge, she says, there by playing with a male team. She's married. She works as a first aid officer at a primary school. Have to remember, of course, that all of these girls have got jobs or study or families that support them, because there's no great financial backing for them to play in the Matildas. We also looked at Sally Shippard. Of course, there's the famous Cheryl, the captain of the team, who's probably the longest playing, serving member of the team.
Tara Walsh recently fractured her leg, which means she hasn't been able to go to the Asia Cup. What injuries were a big part of your journey, is that right?
Well, funny you should say that, because when I first met Sally Shipard from Canberra, she hadn't played out on the field for 9 months because of leg injury, and so she was basically in rehab the whole time, but training as much as she could and hoping that she was going to be placed in the team for the World Cup. And she made it, and her first match with Ghana in the World Cup, she actually injured her toe, and then she was out for the second match. And that's indicative of what happens to a lot of the girls over the years, you know. Seems to me that knee injuries are happen almost every match. I would say probably half the team have had knee replacement, if not two or three knee replacements, and we're talking about women who are in their 20s. What I was constantly impressed with was the camaraderie in the team and the support. The youngest player was 16, the oldest mid-30s, so incredibly diverse range of age and backgrounds, and yet a common bond, which was football. And no matter the emotional, physical state of each one of those players, the team supported them all and encouraged them, and you really had that sense in the dressing room. You know, fragile characters would be supported, people who had injuries and loss of expectation for the next match were looked after. A very close-knit group of people.
And has your daughter seen the movie?
Yes, she has, and my daughter's seen the film not just once, but a number of times now. And I must say, I reckon her playing has actually she's honed her skills a bit. You know, she really is. She's inspired by them. So if nothing else, one of my initial aims, which is to have a role model for young and up and coming players from this documentary, I think I've definitely achieved that. Watching my daughter. You know, watching the documentary over and over again and then going out and playing her Sunday matches in the under-12.
That's SBS documentary maker Helen Barrow, Never Say Die Matildas, which airs on SBS on Saturday night at 9:30. So have a look at it. Should be a great video. Now, we've got some football news that we didn't give out earlier. So away we go. Michelle.
Well, I like to start with the Jets news. Kaz Badafta has signed for the Jets. You probably heard it a couple of weeks here as a rumour, but it's now been confirmed.
And also Ozzie Joe Simenic will be playing in the European Cup for Croatia.
And spare a thought for Les Murray and Tony Palumbo. They haven't got all 16 games of the Euro, or however many games there are, but they're doing it tough in Switzerland and Austria, covering the Euro for 2008 and the rest of us Aussies. Thank you, Les and Tony.
And for some more A-League news, Perth Glory. It's good news for Perth Glory. They have signed 19 players, and Nikita
Rukovic.
Thanks, David. is back with the Perth Glory after trialling in Germany.
Alex Tobin has been signed as an assistant, but signed as a coach for Maranith youth team.
And Sydney FC started their trials on Monday to gain. They had 40 players for their youth team come along.
And Aussie's richest man, Clive Palmer, signed up for an A-League team, which would be, I think, known as Gold Coast United.
So we've now got the richest man, Clive Palmer, and second richest man, Frank Lowy. We just need a third richest man, James Packer, to get in board. So get on, James, before it's too late, mate.
For Canberra. Yeah, don't miss the bus, yes.
Yeah. Michelle?
And what about the Matildas? We're playing, the game for the Matildas will be showing on SBS at, on 9:30. That's the... Yeah.
Yeah, that is. That's the Never Say Die Matildas. And the Matildas, we're going to talk about Matildas in a few moments, but we'll talk about their Asian Cup journey. Coming up now, we've got an interview with from the FFA coaching course just after this. The FFA coaching course took place in Sydney last week. We weren't there, but we were able to interview Richard Shuttleworth, the man who was there. If you're coaching young players, or you're coaching perhaps teenage boys or girls, what should you teach first, tactics or skills? Interesting question. Lots of people have their own opinions. Here's what a man who is a professional at the AIS, works in skill acquisitions. And we'll be hearing from Richard over the next few weeks, different parts and different thoughts on his ideas. This is the introduction, I suppose, to a series of interviews with Richard. And here's what he had to say.
The area is called skill acquisition. Working in academia for a while, the area in academia is motor learning. which basically is about how do we learn novel skills or new skills, and how do we transfer them into competition or high-pressure situations.
So you work at the IAS. Which particular sports do you focus on normally?
A range of team sports and also individual sports. Team sports including football, rugby league, rugby union, some Aussie rules as well. And in the individual sports, kayaking, slalom, canoeing, rowing, and a range of different sports like that, like cycling. So there is a diverse range there where the principles of skill acquisition can actually transfer across a number of different sports. Kelly Cross from the FFA approached me in previous meetings and asked me to make a presentation to a range of level coaches who were coaching football from junior grassroots right through to sort of the elite level. So my area of skill acquisition is about learning skills and decision-making skills, which primarily is developed at a younger age. So I thought the best way to approach this was to aim it at coaches coaching players around the sort of 7, 8 through to 15, 16 age group. And this is probably a critical period where players do acquire, these skills, which make them very, very good decision makers and highly skilled players later on in their careers. So I really touched on a number of concepts and principles which I use for best practice, i.e., how do we retain and learn skills and how do we transfer them? So
when you're talking about skill retention and acquisition, as a general principle, you get a 7 or 8 year old coming. What sort of general sort of advice would you give in terms of how kids retain and acquire skills?
How do we teach young kids to play the game and learn skills which better able them to play a game and enjoy the game and actually tactically understand the game? And there are some issues within research currently as to the best way about this, but generally I think it can be summed up in probably three approaches. One is skills first, teaching individual skills, and then progressing it through to tactics so we can play a game. The other way would be to play a game first and then work through to the individual skills a bit later on as and when needed. The third one, develop them both together. And that's probably a sort of a forgotten component, and that's one is particularly supported by some of the research that I'm involved in terms of where skills can actually emerge and come out of the situations that you design as a coach, hence small-sided games. Which seems to be appearing to be quite popular in the current trend in Australian football. And, many coaches have their own philosophies. Traditionally, there's a dichotomy between the first two, saying which one is better than the other. And I think that has led to a lot of the problems faced by coaches and sort of saying, well, you know, is one any different to the other? And if it is, should we be doing this or should we be doing the other? But there is an approach, which is TGFU, Thinking Games for Understanding, which sort of evolved in the 80s into Game Sense in Australia through Rod Thorpe, Dave Bunker. And that approach really is to generate more interest in the kids when they play the game. So just play games, introduce the rules progressively, and the skills will adapt themselves or emerge out of situations. So you don't actually prescriptively coach a skill or a technique. They actually evolve out of the situations that are evolving out of the game. So that approach, that third approach, really is one which is more holistic. The kids definitely are motivated and have fun playing these games, but there is an onus on the coach to actually know the principles of the game and devise games that have the correct amount of space, the numbers of players, and the right rules and the right conditions, so that these behaviours or the desired behaviours evolve out of these games. For example, controlling the first touch on the inside of the foot, so the body shape is more open and more conducive to learning skills later on. So I think that it's not a case of saying, well, skills first to tactics is better than tactics to skills. I think it's a case of a situation of saying, well, what is needed? What is the problem that's occurring? Are the skills hindering the progression of the games? And if so, then maybe we need to do some sort of skill-based sessions.
That was Richard Shuttleworth from the AIS talking talking tactics versus skills, an interesting debate that will continue, no doubt, and we'll hear more from Richard in a few weeks. You're listening to the Near Post Across Australia on the Australian Community Radio Network. We're going to talk Matildas for the last few minutes. Crucial games coming up in the Asian Cup. Have you seen, what are your thoughts, or what are the results of the game, Michelle Rowe, last night?
The Matildas scraped through, losing to Japan 3-1 after losing after being 3-0 down. They finally got a goal that actually, is going to get them to the semis.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was a bit of a shock because they beat, who did they beat? They beat Chinese Taipei or Taiwan, depending on your politics.
4-0.
4-0, and then they beat
Korea
2-0. And Korea had beaten Japan 3-1, so I was fully expecting us to flog Japan. But it wasn't to be. And
no, we had to have our defender coming in and scoring the goal for us as well to get us there. They say the Socceroos were lucky on Sunday, and I think the Matildas were even luckier.
Well, we're not called the lucky country for nothing, are we? It was, I guess the Matildas had a lot of changes. Cheryl Salisbury missed the game. That would be a big key loss. And I spoke to Colette McCullum this afternoon, and she said Cheryl Salisbury being out really... They lacked a lot of organisation, and she kind of holds it together. Japan, saw a bit of the game, and the Japan technically and the skill, they were superb. Yeah, so yeah. It's a big challenge, but it's a young Matildas side. There's been a lot of changes since the World Cup, but given the results in America and against Canada, kind of thought they would have sort of eased through the group a little bit easier. But still, they're now going to play Korea in North Korea.
It might be a surprise coming through now that after that game against Japan, hopefully they'll be looking at improving. I mean, in that group, I mean, they still didn't do too bad. They finished top with two other teams.
I think they finished second.
Goal difference.
So they play North Korea. North Korea now beat them in the Olympic qualification campaign last year, 2-0 in Pyeongchang. Thanks.
Yeah.
And 2-0 in Coffs Harbour. So it's going to be a tough game, and I don't like to say it, but I think this might be the end of the road for the Matildas.
Oh, you never know. You never know. I think if they play the way they did in America, although they lost a couple of their games, they've still got a big chance.
Colette McCullum was saying that she's a Celtic fan, I should just point out. She was saying that the heat has been a big drain on them, and they're finding it a little bit difficult backing up from a game, then a day break, and then a game. And the Japanese side, they rested the whole team for the game prior to the Matildas game, so that perhaps gave them a big boost.
Definitely.
Now, quick prediction, who's going to win?
I think the Matildas would win 1-0.
Good. You always pick Australia and you're always right.
Yeah, I'm inclined to go that way as well. I think hopefully 1-0 will be the Matildas scoreline at the end to the Aussies.
Okay, well, I'm hoping so too, but I'm not as confident as you guys, so I'm predicting a North Korea win, but we won't say that very loudly. Okay, that's the show for this week. Matildas, Socceroos, fantastic. Great to have you here, Michelle and Fidsom. Thanks to Capital Football for the support, and to Isla Pentakainen and Ben Ellis-Butler for producing the show. And remember, wherever you are, if you're going to the Near Post,
get there first.
If it's for football news that you thirst, the Near Post, get there first.
Good evening and welcome to Capital Football's Near Post radio show. It's a wet and rainy Canberra day, but never mind, lucky we're indoors tonight. As mentioned, we've got a massive show this evening.
How big?
Huge. One of the biggest shows we've had this year, easily. Unfortunately, last week...
I'm waiting for the tiny show. Well, do you ever have a tiny show? Anyway, go on, Chris. I won't stop you there.
Big show. Only big shows here, Eamon. But unfortunately, as Russ Gibbs, our co-host, mentioned last week, we were going to be joined by Manchester United goalkeeper Edwin van der Sar. Unfortunately, he forgot Euros on and couldn't make the flight out. Couldn't find the time. But we're fortunate to be joined by an even... better guest, Steve Dospot's joining us this evening. Unfortunately, Russ is, of course, having to play football tonight, which is bad news, so we're stuck with one Eamon Flanagan, but he's no mug himself. He knows what's going on local football.
Absolutely, no mug.
But we do have a big show this evening. We'll take a look at the news headlines. We catch up with Marty Smith. And again, if you want your club or player or coach profiled, make sure you get to the Capital Football website or email us at media@capitalfootball.com.au. But here's Eamon Flanagan with the news headlines.
There's plenty of news, as always, in Canberra football. The high-profile news, Canberrans Amy Chapman, Lydia Williams and Caitlin Munoz all playing in Vietnam for the Matildas in the Asian Cup. Carl Valeri came on for the Socceroos, former Tuggeranong United junior, in the World Cup qualifier in Brisbane in front of almost 50,000 fans. Great for Carl, and, of course, the team got the win. Chris, you got a bit of news?
Mate, I suppose the biggest news coming out of the Capital Football office is the possibility of seeing an A-League fixture in Canberra. Unfortunately, we missed out on a pre-season match, but we could see an A-League grand final. It's yet to be confirmed. Hopefully that will be done later this week or early next week. But Central Coast v Newcastle Jets at Canberra Stadium on the 11th of July.
Keep the date free then.
That's absolutely 1 o'clock kickoff. So, as I said, yet to be confirmed, but it's looking very positive.
Nikolai Tupou-Stanley, Carl Valeri's former Tuggeranong United junior mate, he's off to Doha as well with the Socceroos squad. So he's been named in the 26, so he gets to keep his place. So great news for Nikolai, who's come into the A-League in Season 2, got a contract via Manly United to Sydney FC, headed over to Perth for a couple of years, and now is forcing his way, well, he's a regular in the Olleroos, and he's forcing his way into the Socceroos. So could be there for 2010. Also, Ben Wilson, linesman in the World Cup qualifier in Seoul, in Korea, in front of 50,000 fans. He watched as Jordan came back from a 2-0 deficit to Korea to draw 2-2. And Ben was also referee for the Melbourne Victory Juventus game, I believe.
Yeah, Ben Williams. It was great to see local boy get such a big fixture down in Melbourne.
And Kasper Tafta, who also came on in that Melbourne Victory game and signed off for Melbourne as he joined up with his old mate from Belconnen, Sean Ontong. He's playing for Newcastle Jets on signed on a 1-year deal. He's no longer loaned out from Benfica, so he's with the Jets for a year, and I guess he would be desperate to get some serious game time this year. And I do believe he's going to be sharing a house with Sean Ontong, so there you go.
Hopefully he can cook.
Yeah, well, Sean told us last week he wasn't much of a cook, but he did say that Kaz was a bit of a good one, so I think he's looking forward to teaming up with his old mate. And Capital Football's Ian Shaw, Technical Director Alex Butt, and Players FC Anthony Hatton were at the two-day coaching conference in Sydney. It was an FFA coaching course. They were mixing it with the likes of former Glasgow Celtic coach Josef Venglos. There's that Celtic mention again. And A-League champion Gary Van Egmond and Craig Foster. So if you see them around the grounds or around town, ask them how they went.
It's not bad company to be in, if you ask me.
Yeah, ask them what they found out. So that's most of the news. And Aussie Canberran Joe Simic starts his third Euro campaign on the weekend with Croatia. So we wish Joe all the best. Okay.
Near post, get there first. The near post, get there first. Don't get there second, don't get there third. The near post, get there first. If it's for football news that you thirst. The near post, get there first.
We've got a special guest in the studio tonight. Welcome to former Soccer Canberra CEO Steve Dunn.
President.
Thank you, Steve. Steve Dospert, how are you, Steve?
Excellent, Eamon. Thank you for having us.
Now, you've been out of the, football administration for a few years now, but obviously your interest in football still strong as ever?
Oh, the passion's still there burning, mate. And the only reason for correcting you, by the way, was that Alan Lee was the CEO and Robbie Bennett before that, so I didn't want to take their their limelight?
No.
I was a mere president, mate.
No, always happy to be corrected, Steve. As I say, what we don't know about football, we make up anyway. So. Now, Steve, you're sitting there with a bit of a poor shoulder. Tell us about that.
Well, I guess my soccer career has finally come to an end after many, many years of playing and playing for the Brindabella Blues a few weeks ago.
In the Masters competition.
I did something rather silly, fell over chasing a ball, so I can't even claim a glorious tackle or a score, but I fractured dislocated my shoulder, which I'm told at my age is not a good thing to happen again, so I'm retiring according to my wife.
Okay, I think that's the official announcement here on air, isn't it? Yeah, Steve Dospert has retired from football in all
forms. Retired from football, but I understand a blossoming golf career in the midst.
Well, I wish I could say blossoming. A frustrating golf career, I think, coming up, yeah. But yes, I'm still passionate about the game and about football, that is, and it's good to be on your show.
It's great to have you here, Steve. Now, you've had a long history involved in football locally. What are some of your memories of that time, or the times that you've had? You're obviously involved with not just, Soccer Canberra, but also the Canberra Cosmos. But, what are some of your strongest memories?
Well, I guess the strongest highlights, and this is starting to sound like way, but, I remember when. But Canberra City, you asked me about Canberra City at the outset, Chris, and I guess Canberra City is one of the highlights of my footballing career. We started a team back in 1977, and we brought Johnny Warren into town, which or city, as we should call our capital city. And Johnny actually helped put us on the map. He didn't set any great sort of standards as a coach. He was a good coach, not a great coach, but he didn't exactly have untold wealth to spend on getting a team together. So he cobbled together a team of expats from Britain and a few locals. Danny Moulis, Stephen Hogg and Mike Milovanovic were 16-year-old players playing for that that team, Canberra City. So I guess that, looking back, that really sort of put soccer on the Canberra map. And from that, of course, we had other players emerge, players that came through the ranks of Canberra City, then from all the, you know, the Canberra Deacons, the Olympics, the Western Creeks and Belconnen, of course, Olympic. There were some great players coming from all of those clubs. They had an opportunity to play at the higher, at a much higher level than they had been used to before. And so, of course, the Cosmos, and unfortunately, no A-League at the moment.
You mentioned Johnny Warren, I guess, struggling to have too many funds, and that seems to have been a feature of Canberra football from, you know, the Cosmos, and I guess the fact that we don't have an A-League side. Is that a source of frustration to you?
Of course it is, and but it's reality. I mean, when you have a look at it, when Canberra City was in existence, we were one of the first national or a team that played at a national level. Rugby league came in, I think, a couple of years after us, and in fact, I think three years after us, and basketball started a year after us. So soccer, sort of, we were the trailblazers in getting our Canberra sport into the mainstream. The Cannons came on board, and they won three competitions in a row, and we were the poor relations, Canberra City. We didn't have the funds, and basketball kicked ahead. Then rugby league, of course, the Raiders in, I think it was in 92, they won their first grand final, and then they won a succession of them, 2-3, and then the Brumbies. So all of these teams have come in, did superbly well, and soccer has always been the poor relation because of the lack of available sponsorship that we could bring into soccer. With Cosmos, we probably achieved the pinnacle of sponsorship in soccer when we bought Novell in, and we got a sponsorship worth $750,000 over 3 years. But by the time we got that sponsorship, the Cosmos was so much in debt that all we were doing was covering past debts. We couldn't really, you know, we were just floating, trying to stay afloat.
I guess one thing that you mentioned there, Steve, unlike perhaps the Cannons and the Brumbies and the Raiders, they've all won titles. And Canberra, you know, we don't have, we've never had a history of any football really success. And, you know, like any club and team, people want to support something that's successful. And if you're not seen to be successful, well, it's very hard to get the sponsorship and the sport. It's a different time for football, but we still are no closer. In fact, perhaps we're further away today. There's been an announcement today by the FFA that 10 bids have been put on the table. You know, you've got the Wollongong, Melbourne, Sydney, two from the Gold Coast, two from Townsville, but there's no Canberra in there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'm very disappointed to hear that. I only found out about that from you about an hour or so ago, and I'm very disappointed by that. The fact that we didn't even put an expression of interest in. I know that football, FFA, I keep saying Soccer Australia still, by the way, so...
That's
FFA,
okay, Steve.
I know, I'm very disappointed by the fact that we didn't at least put an expression of interest in the sense that there is interest here in the capital, and I know you guys have been pushing for an A-League presence for a while. The reality of, you know, the funds we require to put in a competitive team is a reality that we have a problem with. But unless we start setting our sights on saying what we would like to achieve, I don't think we'll ever do it.
Now, I should point out that you're standing for election in the coming elections in
October.
Well, yeah, in October. I haven't kind of honed in there yet, just recovered from the federal election, Steve. So tell me about your candidacy and which electorate you're standing in.
Well, I've been pre-selected by the Liberal Party for the Brindabella electorate, and that covers all of Tuggeranong, and I think Farrah's now coming to that area as well. So I've lived in the Tuggeranong area now for about 14 years, having spent the early part of my Canberra life living in Fisher. So, and Western Creek was one of the clubs that I captain coached back in the early days before I joined Canberra City. So, yep, I'm trying for the third time to try and get in. We came very close last time, and I'm quite confident that we'll do reasonably well.
Well, the Near Post always support football politicians, so we wish you well, Steve. So from a point of view of, an A-League team, okay, we've had a knockback, a severe knockback. We need a lot of funds. I mean, basically, it seems, I guess, is there any way forward for Canberra? It's easy to talk, oh, yes, we need a team, we should have a team. But we're missing out. This guy, Clive Palmer, the richest man in Australia, has just put his funds into the Gold Coast. Now, that tells me something. And one of the reasons he wants to get into football, apparently, is because he's got a company that digs iron ore out of the ground or whatever you do. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he's got links with China, sees the opportunities for China and Asian links. We don't have, if Canberra's not going to have a team, and at the moment we're not going to have a team, that means for the foreseeable future, we are never going to have a sporting team that goes into Asia. As a yep. future politician, potentially, do you see that as a problem?
Well, leaving politics out of it, just from a pragmatic soccer point of view, football point of view, I find that very disappointing and very depressing that we're sort of fallen even further behind than we were in our ambitions, if you like, not necessarily our ability to raise the funds for it, but the fact that we haven't even got the ambition to get there, I find that quite depressing. Reality, as I said, dictates that we need to have better source of funding than we've had in the past, but there are ways of doing that. You mentioned Asia. Now, I've been a very strong supporter of getting an involvement in Asia at the national level. I think our football can really generate a lot of relationship building throughout the whole Asia region. And I've had fairly strong ties with South Korea with some of the work that I've done there. And I know that there are organisations, companies and big companies, multi-billion dollar organisations that are looking at spreading their name, and Hyundai is one of them, of course, LG, and there are a number of Korean companies that I think could be coaxed but at least courted to at least pay some attention to the possibility of doing something with us. Whether it can be done is another point, but the fact is, if we haven't got the ambition to at least try and open up some new avenues of involvement, I think, we'll never have an A-League team.
And certainly Frank Lowy was talking up the idea of a relegation promotion, therefore a second division, which obviously might be pie in the sky, but obviously he's thinking about it down the track. Mm. And if we don't have that ambition now to get a team, well, we need it at least even to get into the second division.
Well, look, I think you mentioned politics. Now, at the federal level, I think our politicians should be certainly courted to try and put their weight behind putting Canberra on the map in the Asian context of having our capital city represented through football, and the opportunities in the Asia Cup and the champions, the Asian Champions Cup that Adelaide and Melbourne are making such an impact in now. Canberra's got to be there. I mean, our capital city is not represented in the major football tournament that we've got playing in the region, as well as in our own A-League.
I'm not sure that the local politicians, and this is just my opinion, that I'm not sure they get it. I'm not sure they understand the links that football can bring into Asia, and maybe not this week or next week, but certainly over the next 5, 10, 15, 20 years, if we're not there. The Central Coast take their team to Hong Kong for a pre-season tournament. Perth Glory, Wellington Phoenix have all been off to China for trips. I'm not sure that the Canberran politicians get it. Is that a fair comment?
Well, I don't think it's the Canberra politicians that can make an impact here. It's really at the federal level that the national benefit of Canberra participating in an Asian competition, I think, would come in. Certainly the local politicians should pay a little bit more attention to that as well, but it's the federal people that have got to be captured. They've got to be motivated to get us in there. And Howard certainly did understand the benefit of sending our teams into Asia. Now, obviously, the Socceroos are doing that at the international level, but certainly Kevin Rudd is also very much aware of the options within China. I mean, that's his area where he does have a lot of expertise, and I believe that the Socceroos will be promoted in there. But from a Canberra perspective, our capital certainly deserves to be there, and that's where perhaps a combination of federal and local people need to push the cause of football a lot more than they're currently pushing it.
Okay, well, you're listening to the Near Post on the on 2XX 98.3 FM with we listen to Steve Dospot from former soccer Canberra, but still heavily involved ideas wise and about to run for politics in the local assembly. Steve, where now for your football journey? What are you watching? What are you thinking about? Other than whether we have a team or not.
I'm watching local football. I went out to the Deakin Olympic game a few weeks ago and was quite impressed by the standard. And seeing the sons of former players playing, Baz Giampolo's son was playing, and it was good to see the skills that he's exhibiting out there. And, of course, that's the first time I've been out to Deakin since they've opened their new field, and it's very, very impressive.
Yeah, that's great, doesn't it?
In fact, I'm having a bit of a homecoming there. I'm taking Zetsa Soldier out, a chief minister in waiting, I might add.
I believe he's a bit of a football fan as well.
I'm trying to make him into an even bigger football fan. But
tell him he's got potentially 17,000 registered votes out there, if not now, in the future when those little people come.
Well, I'm taking him out to the Canberra football. Canberra City.
This weekend,
yeah. So that's we'll be having a bet on which team's going to win, but I think he'll probably have a slight edge on that.
Now, I understand you're not just getting out watching these football games. I understand you've got a bit of say when it comes to capital football celebrity tipping as well. You've been giving a bit of...
I've had the odd discussion with Gary Humphries about... teams, but he's doing extremely well, actually. I think he's and he doesn't need my help, but he's only a point off the leader, and who's leading the comp?
Mr. Andrew Barr joint leaders with Mr. One Eamon Flanagan.
That's right. Well, I've got nothing else to do other than study the form guide. There you go.
So you're helping Andrew, are you?
No, I don't help any. Steve, I would never say that with you here. Okay, we're talking to Steve Dospot. Thank you very much, Steve, for joining us tonight. We've got to move on, I guess, but we appreciate you coming in, particularly at short notice, and we look forward to having more football-minded people in the local assembly. Good luck.
Thank you very much, and my pleasure, and thank you for having us on the program tonight, and keep up your good work, and especially keep up your crusading. I know you're doing a lot of crusading for the A-League, and we need to do that. Let's get the people out there excited about the prospect of what we can do if we start putting our minds to it. It can be done, but it needs a bit more energy than we're currently putting into it.
I'm Kai.
I'm Shay.
And I'm Irish.
And we love football.
You're listening to
2XX.
Our sideline reporter, Marty Smith, went out on the weekend. He paid Bell North a visit and had a chat to Jenny Goyne. She was out there fundraising for a particularly special cause on the weekend, trying to raise money for leukemia after a young boy named Ross Green is currently suffering leukemia. So she was out there trying to earn a bit of money, and this is what Marty had to say.
So we're here with Jenny Goyne from Bell North Junior Soccer Club. Jenny, thanks for joining us. So we're down here at Girilang today trying to raise some money. Can you just tell us a little bit about your cause?
I'm trying to raise some money for Ross Green and his family. Ross has leukemia and is spending the majority of his time in Sydney having treatment at the moment. He's a couple weeks away from receiving a bone marrow transplant, and I'm trying to help the family as much as I can.
So how much has Bell North got behind Ross and his cause?
We're supporting, Bell North itself is supporting as much as we can. We will be holding a fundraiser for Ross in a few months' time, a fundraising night where we hope to be donated memorabilia, which we can auction on the night. We're selling raffle tickets on a daily basis. Every Saturday we'll have a raffle prize drawn here at the club rooms, and we're trying to give them monies to enable them to travel to and from Sydney every week. They have four kids here in Canberra, and they're juggling between the two parents, between Canberra and Sydney, and a lot of travel, a lot of expenses, and both of them, they can't work much at the moment. Bruce doesn't work at all, and Bridget's on half pay, so we're trying to support them as best we can.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, the photo on the fundraising poster is Ross with Laurie McKenna. That must have been a big thrill for him, having someone like that.
Yes, it was. Yes, he just adored it. He thought it was the greatest thing. we hope that a few other people will get behind Ross, like Laurie McKenna did, and go over and see him in the hospital if they can, and perhaps do whatever they can to support him.
So just a little bit about Bell North. How are the participation numbers in junior football with the introduction of Rubel?
We have about 1,000 kids here in Rubel. I think the percentage is up a little bit on last year. It goes up. It seems to go up every year. We have a lot more teams this year than we did last year. I'm just not sure of the total at the moment.
Now, you're obviously involved with the club. You're obviously a volunteer as well. What brings you back to Bell North?
I enjoy the interaction with people. I love helping people out on a Saturday. I'm usually here most of the day supporting people, helping them with their problems, registering new families, anything I can do.
Thank you very much for your time. Good luck with the fundraising.
That was Morty Smith catching up with Jenny Goyne at Bell North. And if anyone wants to contribute to the fundraising efforts for Ross, please do contact Bell North. Again, any fundraising is certainly going to a great cause. But let's take a look at the Women's Premier League results from the weekend. A massive upset, shall we say. Canberra City defeating Belconnen United 1-0. That was quite a phenomenal match on Saturday afternoon at the Traders Hawker and closed.
Yeah, the league's been quite, I suppose, Western Creek, Bell, West Foxes, Belconnen have been the three top teams, and I've been going along. I'm not top of the tipping league for nothing. I just tipped those three teams. But unfortunately, this week, Canberra City, well done, Canberra City. They've upset the uppercut and the 1-0 win.
Absolutely. A goal from Danica Drygroot there. But what I understand, Canberra City were a very inspired side. Unfortunately, they only had 11 players for the match, which is quite incredible. So they played their full side, no substitutes, 45 minutes on the pitch, first half, 11-on-11. At halftime, through illness, the player couldn't play in the second half. Down a man, or should we say a woman, for the entire second half. And to be able to hold on to that 1-0 lead.
Funny game football, isn't it, mate? Funny game. So, yeah, so they held on with 10 men. That's fantastic. And particularly against a top side like Belconnen. I know former near post host Nicole Somi will not be happy. But there you go, Nicole, take it on the chin.
That's it. Well, you know, as you said, that is football, unfortunately. And we so often see that you don't need to have the majority of possession to come out winners in this game, do you?
Certainly don't, as the Socceroos would tell you. Now, Western Creek, Bell West. Western Creek 3, Bell West 0. That's a bit of a flogging.
That is. It's a bit of a shock, that result. I think most people, from what I stand in the tipping, were I guess looking at more of a draw than a 3-0 ups.
Yeah.
Not really an upset, but a 3-0 scoreline.
That's probably the biggest result of the season, actually. It sort of kind of sets Western Creek nice and firmly at the top of the ladder, and it gives them a bit of breathing space. And it's a big win. So it sends a message loud and clear that probably Western Creek are the team to beat after six games played.
Absolutely.
They lost the grand final last year to Belconnen United on penalties. But this year, clearly, they've improved a bit.
Quite stunning. One of the more incredible statistics this year, 5 clean sheets for Louisa Mozzotto.
Well, she was the striker last year, but of course she is a former AIS keeper.
Back in goals this year.
Making all the difference. What about the other game, Chris?
The other game was ANU and Woden Valley, a nil-all draw there. That was a bottom-of-the-table clash, and those sides just cannot seem to get over each other. In round one, both sides drew 1-1 this time around. Both sides draw 0-0, and
it's a good result for football. It keeps their season alive. Nobody wants to come bottom. Woden Valley got 3 points, ANU 2, so forever the rest of the season they can play their hearts out to try and get off the bottom. Whereas if one team had won, I mean, that would be the other team's season over.
What's fascinating is that Canberra City currently sit in fourth with 7 points, followed behind by Woden Valley with 3 and ANU on 2. But 2 wins, you're in the top 4, so While ANU sit on the bottom, there's still everything to play for.
There's everything to play for. You're right, I'm wrong. And Canberra City, certainly with a 1-0 win, that shows that if they do get in the four, they've got a chance to do somebody over. They're probably not going to get in the top two, but it's looking good for them. So what's the table then?
Quickly having a look at the table. Western Creek are in the lead after 6 rounds with 5 wins, 1 loss and 15 points. Bell West in second, 4 wins, 2 losses, 12 points. Belconnen, similar results on 12 points. Canberra City are in fourth with a win, a draw, 3 losses on 7 points. Woden Valley with 3 draws, 3 losses. So 3 losses, but still 3 draws. That's half of the games they're coming away with a point. So they're on 3 points. and ANU bring up the rear ends with 2 points.
Okay, that's the show for this week.
Near post, get there first.